Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and scholars like Michelle Alexander, athletes like Colin Kaepernick, filmmakers like Ava DuVernay are among those who have forced the issue of black and brown over-policing and incarceration to the national fore. Lots of non-famous people, too. Caught, a new podcast from WNYC, looks at the very root of the issue, how young black and brown teens first encounter police and prison, and how hard it is to break the cycle that the American justice system often pushes them into. Kari Pitkin is with us. She's senior producer of WNYC's Radio Rookies Project and produces this podcast. Dwayne Betts is also with us, an award-winning poet, an Emerson Fellow at New America, a Yale Law School graduate, a juvenile justice advocate, author of the book Bastards of the Reagan Era. And in his own youth, he spent 9 years incarcerated. So, Dwayne, welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for giving us some time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And, Kari, thanks for walking all the way over from the newsroom.
Thank you, Brian.
First, Kari, how different was this project than what you typically do with Radio Rookies? You're used to equipping teens with microphones and recorders to tell their stories for radio. But how much more challenging was it logistically to get Z, the incarcerated teenager in the series, to be able to record and tell his story from inside prison?
Well, yeah, this is a great question because it's something that was really kind of at the start of this project. So I've been producing Radio Rookies for well over 10 years. And, you know, as you just said, we try to get young people to tell their own stories. And what for a long time we'd been thinking, is there a way for us to access the stories of young people in the justice system? And to be really honest, I was very sort of skeptical that that was possible. I felt like there's no way that we could run a workshop. Typically, our workshops run for about 6 months, and they're very intensive. But one of our producers, Courtney Stein, got access to a facility in Ozone Park, Queens. There's a new program happening in New York City where they're trying to close upstate detention facilities and open centers in New York City. And she got access to one of these close-to-home facilities, and she started running a workshop, and things were going well. And then 2 months into it, we were asked not to come back. Nothing that we had done. There were just complications around, you know, letting journalists into that space, I think. And so we realized, though, that we had developed this relationship with Z, the kid who is kind of one of the sort of central stories of the podcast, and we really didn't want to abandon telling his story. And so we assigned a reporter to continue following him, and we kind of stayed in touch. And then when he got out, we just kept kind of meeting up with him and reporting. And so it sort of was this huge transition for us, because normally, as you say, we're kind of giving the microphones over to the kids, and we did some of that, but logistically, that just wasn't possible with these stories, but we didn't want to abandon the important story that needed to be told.
And I want to play a clip from the podcast. Z's first run in with the law was at age 12 after getting into a fight in middle school over candy, believe it or not. Z admits the fight got physical, but listen to Z describing in this clip to Kai Wright, who's the host of the podcast, right?
Yes, exactly.
What happened the first time he was arrested.
And I was in front of the store one day by the school, and all of a sudden I seen two cops coming towards me, but it looked like they wasn't trying to look at me. So I was like, all right, maybe I'm over-exaggerating, they're not coming towards me. So it looked like they about to walk right past me. I put my head down. All I feel is a handcuff on one of my arms. I'm like, oh.
Wow.
Yeah, they got me.
Wow. Had you ever been in any trouble before that with the law of any kind?
Nah. Like, not with the law. Like, maybe truancy or something like that. Skipping out of school in a paddy wagon come get you.
Reason why I ask, you know, because I think a lot of people, certainly me, you know, when I was 12, if somebody walked up and put a handcuff on me, it would have been I'd have been like, whoa, this is crazy. What's this? This is a cop. But you'd seen this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
Would they cuff you when they would arrest you for truancy, or when they'd stop you for truancy?
Sometimes, depending if you try to run.
Did you ever run?
Yeah, a couple times.
It's funny, but of course, it's really not. because it was the start of a childhood in which truant officers and cops and courts have been as common as schools.
WNYC's Kai Wright, host of the new podcast, Caught in Conversation with Z. Is that what he goes by, or was that that's what you're calling him to not identify him to the world?
That's exactly right, because he is a juvenile, and I think his record will be sealed. We want to protect his privacy.
So, Dwayne Betts, what are you thinking as you hear that?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's a story that's told far too often. You know, you think about if you live in a certain community, you get in a fight. Before putting handcuffs on you, the police talk to you. They ask you what your name is. They address you. They take you home. You never have cuffs on. You live in a different community, and the first response, you know, regardless of what happens afterwards, the first response is like always handcuffs. And you begin to imagine that that's just how authority deals with you.
Now, listeners, we're going to open up our phones for a few minutes with a very specific question. When you were young, were you ever caught doing something you shouldn't have been? But I mean when you were young. Young enough that if you were given a second chance, were you able to learn from it, or were you not given a second chance? And something you did when you were really young, like Z's first encounter with the police, as we just heard, there was when he was 12, and maybe the system didn't give you a second chance, the ability to have a second chance, or maybe it was an unnecessary contact with the system that led to a spiral. That wound up with you not being able to get your footing as a young adult. Call and tell us your story either way. Were you caught doing something as a young person, 12 or teenager, that you shouldn't have been doing? Were you given a second chance and able to learn from it, or did it have lifelong consequences? 212-433-WNYC. Let's see if we get any stories that end either of those ways. 212-433-9692. As we talk about our new WNYC Radio Rookies podcast, or I guess not really a Radio Rookies podcast, just you, Kari, usually produce Radio Rookies. So it's a new WNYC podcast called Caught. And while we're seeing if some calls come in, Dwayne, maybe you want to tell your story a little bit, because Z is eventually found guilty of armed robbery, and I understand you committed a similar crime at a similar age. So maybe you want to tell your narrative a little bit?
Yeah, I think the thing that's probably central is, well, first, I was 16, and I carjacked somebody, and I got locked up the next day. And I was tried as an adult. I pled guilty. And in Virginia, carjacking carries life. And so I was pled guilty, stood in front of a judge, facing a life sentence at 16 years old. Now, the judge sentenced me to 9 years, and that was 9 years I served in a series of adult prisons in Virginia. But for me, the thing that's interesting is that the conversation isn't just about when police in the state overreacts when you've committed a crime that really shouldn't involve handcuffs at all. It's really about how we kind of haven't figured out how to be thoughtful when young people have committed violent crimes. Because I can see my crime was violent. I can see that I needed to be punished in some way. But what I don't concede is that I needed to spend nearly a decade in some of the worst prisons in Virginia. And what I don't concede is that a judge should have been in a position to tell me on my sentencing day, I'm under no illusion that sending you to prison will help. You know, one of the things I tell people a lot is that I've accomplished a few things since I've been released from prison. But the truth is that nobody involved, neither the prosecutor, the judge, the probation officers, the court staff that did my pre-sentencing report, none of them thought about me in a way that imagined me being successful when I became an adult, and that's what shaded their decision making. And I think that when you realize that that's what happened with Z, when he just got in a fight at 12 years old, you understand why it's easy for something like that to happen when a kid does do something that's violent, does do something that warrants a punishment, but the punishment frequently just like further exacerbates whatever the underlying issues are.
Let's take a phone call. Our lines are full. We have 10 lines, and 10 lines are full with people who want to tell their stories. So let's hear a couple of them. How about Joe in the Bronx? Joe, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. So I want to start with I am a white man. I grew up in a suburb outside of a affluent suburb outside of New York City. And when I was 15, I was caught shoplifting, and I got a slap on the wrist. No big deal, and no punishment whatsoever. I had to return the item, the CD that I stole. But I work in a minority community in the Bronx with kids, and I got to tell you, my students who are not white don't get the same compassion for making mistakes that I received when I was 15 years old. And I think that they should receive, listen, I'm not condoning shoplifting at all, but kids make mistakes, and we should not ruin someone's life if they're 15, 14, 13, and, you know, ruin their life going forward, you know, for a mistake they made as a kid.
Joe, thank you very much. And Kari, that's one of the main, and I see that a number of our callers are white people calling to say, yeah, I was given a second chance, and that they see how different it is for kids of color who may have done the same exact kinds of things that they did, just the kind of story that Joe is telling.
So actually, one of our stories, we partnered with the Marshall Project and did an investigation into solitary confinement for juveniles in New York State. And the sort of central person within that story is a young woman who at 16 was accused of shoplifting. She wasn't even caught shoplifting. She was accused of shoplifting, wound up in detention, and wound up in solitary confinement for 45 days in one of the worst county jails in the state. So, yes, there is an enormous discrepancy in kind of how the system responds and then what the impact is.
And, Duane, in the 90s, popular culture was stoking fears about black masculinity. One of the comparisons, you know, white-black that I brought up here in the past is that with street crime that was going on perpetrated by black and Latino teenagers, there was a New York Post word, super predators, that caught on. Even Hillary Clinton used it at one time, and she certainly got called out for it by Black Lives Matter during the presidential campaign in 2016. So super predators. But when that kid shot up Columbine High School, that white kid also in the 90s, that started a national crisis of introspection among white Americans. How are we failing our kids? What are we doing as a society to produce an act like that? And the difference was so stark. So when we look back at the 90s, popular culture was stoking fears about black masculinity. And I wonder, with your story coming from that time, how you saw yourself in that popular narrative.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, one, we don't have a language of mercy for young brown and black kids who get in trouble. And we don't even need to talk about adults. We just have no language of mercy for young black and brown kids who commit crimes, who are accused of crimes. And that's why when you look to explain who they are, a narrative like super predator, not just because think about it. This is like a superhuman individual who was supposed to run out and wreak havoc on the street. And when John DeLulio advanced this, the reality is that his statistics were all wrong. And so what we have is just this catchphrase that people believe is applicable to black and brown people.
John DeLulio was a researcher about crime at that time, yeah.
Right, but what you don't see, and this is the sad part about it, this is the tragic part about it, is 20 years later, you know, all his research has been proven wrong, and we've recognized that we made mistakes, but we still haven't developed a language of mercy that mimics, that can be compared to what we developed around Columbine and around all of these tragic mass shootings. We don't have the same ability to talk about young black people who get caught up in a system in the same way.
Let's take another call. Ernie in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ernie. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I got caught jumping a turnstile. I'm a New York City kid many years ago, and it was a violation. Basically, you got a ticket, and you went home. And now it's a misdemeanor, and it seems ridiculous that in New York City, where there are many, many people of color, that this, theft of service is a misdemeanor. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Thank you very much. Kari, the series basically accepts Z's guilt as a given, but I think kind of coaxes us to see guilt and innocence simultaneously in Z. Is that a fair way to put it?
I think that is fair. I think one of the central questions that we're asking and wrestling with is, how do we think about kids who potentially do bad things or make a terrible mistake? And it's really been interesting for me because I've had to wrestle with it myself in thinking through some of the stories, some of the young people we've been following. One of our central characters is a young man who at 16 actually stabbed his sister. He didn't kill her, but he hurt her. And, you know, he actually did end up in a diversion program and got kind of another chance. So there was some sense of what might mercy look like for him. But it's really a tough question. And that question of what does it mean to be young? What does it mean when your brain isn't fully developed and you do something bad? What should be the response?
Manny in Williamsburg, you're on WNYC. Hi, Manny.
Hi. Hey, it's a pleasure to be talking with you. And I just wanted to let you guys know, I'm a person of color. I'm Puerto Rican. I'm 42 years old. I was in my teenagers in the 90s. And there were several times that I had gotten stopped by police officers. And you know what? Luckily, they've let me go. I recall a time on 6th Avenue at around 11 p.m. We were waiting to pick up my friend's wife. Well, not wife, girlfriend at that time, from work when the World Trade Center was still up. And we were smoking pot in the vehicle. And we got stopped by detectives. And they asked me if I had any more pot in the vehicle. I told them no, and they let me go without even searching the car. There was another time in the neighborhood. Me and my friends, we were throwing objects at each other. Stupid, typical teenager stuff back then in Brooklyn. It was way worse in Williamsburg than it is right now with all the hipsters and stuff. But they let me go. And you know what? One thing that sticks out is the way in which I interacted with the officer. I was very polite. I was very calm. And I think that if you look at some of the videos on YouTube, some of the people, the way in which they're interacting with officers is basically setting them off.
And this is, I'm going to leave it there for time, but this is a little pushback from Manny here, Duane. This is maybe whether you get shoved into that criminal justice rabbit hole for little things is going to depend on your encounter with the police.
Yeah, but we should be real clear about this. We expect adults trained, trained police officers to respond to young people based on their position and their authority and not based on the way that those young people respond to them. So whether or not you get a break, whether or not you get mercy, whether or not you get treated the way most young white kids get treated in the suburbs should not be based on your attitude when the police engage with you. I mean, I think that that's just sort of a non-starter, because what it does is it says that all of these young black folks and brown folks who get incarcerated, who have problematic interactions with the police, it's all because they have an attitude, when maybe part of their attitude is the fact that we incarcerate more people than anybody else on the planet. And that, by and large, most of those people are black and brown. And we're talking about children. So regardless of, and I'm glad that this young man, when he was young, got a break from police. But we should be clear that we're talking about children in these instances. And we should never say that the onus is on a 12-year-old. Think about Z. We're saying that basically at 12, he should have responded better to the police when they slapped handcuffs on his wrist. And I just think that's absurd.
So we've gotten a little taste here of the new WNYC podcast, Caught, with Kai Wright, which looks at the very root of the issue of black and brown youth encountering policing and incarceration at such a young age, individual stories and, you know, big picture national repercussions. And Kari Pitkin is the producer And Kari, you want to just tell people how they can listen to Caught?
Sure. If you go to wnyc.org/caught, or you can just go to wherever you subscribe to your podcast and look up Caught WNYC.
And we thank Dwayne Betts for joining us also, award-winning poet, Emerson Fellow at New America, Yale Law School graduate, juvenile justice advocate, author of the book Bastards of the Reagan Era. Hey, when did that book come out? We're a long way from the Reagan era. When did you write that?
You know, it came out in 2015. And you know, my kids are with me. I should say that. My sons are with me listening to this.
How old are they?
Micaiah's 10 and Miles is 6.
What are you teaching them related to the conversation that we had today?
I'm teaching them that yesterday was Pi Day. And so I taught them what 3.14159 means.
Great. Dwayne, Kari, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Brian.